Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio Show, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. Gordon Glantz with me. There is no Game 7. We were hopeful that we'd be talking about Game 7 coming up for the Flyers-Capitals. It ended today with a 1-0 loss to the Capitals in Game 6. Also, big week NFL draft. Gordon's got some NFL draft stuff for us. Lots of great NFL draft. We'll have lots of draft talk today. We'll probably the second half of the show, maybe even the last 20 minutes, will be dedicated to the draft. But first, let's talk a little Philadelphia Flyers. I believe we have Josh Landsberg with us as well. Josh, you with us? No, that's not. Oh, another call. It's tough to keep track here. Josh, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. We have another caller on the line, I believe. Give that call just a second. Caller, what's that?
Just holding for me. I'm just holding when I listen to the show.
Okay. Thank you very much. Gordon, we'll start with you. Flyers, really a tremendous effort, but couldn't put the puck in the net. They only scored 6 goals in the whole series, 6-game series. What's your feeling coming out? Let's start, actually, the biggest failing. We'll start with the negative because it is Philadelphia. The power play, what was wrong with the power play? They got one for 24 in the series.
Yeah, I believe it was you, Josh, and myself, we talked about the series before it began. And as soon as I hung up the phone, one thing I really kicked myself over was the most obvious thing was special teams, you know, not taking stupid penalties, because Washington has a pretty good power play, you know, with Ovechkin as a trigger man and some other really skilled guys, you know, Carlson and all those guys. And the Flyers, if they got power plays, that I felt the Flyers' power play was pretty effective and they needed to cash in on opportunities. And that thing, I wish I had gone on record as saying it because that really was the difference. I mean, you know, you go back to even game one, the Flyers had a couple power plays right out of the chute in the first period and couldn't cash in. And that could have changed the complexion of that game, which could have changed the complexion of the whole series. So, you know, special teams were gigantic. You ran up against good teams that go far in the playoffs are teams that kill penalties, and then when they get power plays, they cash in on them. I mean, the Flyers had a 5-1-3 today at a crucial time, couldn't cash in. So, I mean, that was really the tale of the series. I mean, the goaltending was outstanding, when the Flyers made the switch to Neuwirth, and Holtby was outstanding pretty much the whole series, which made for some good playoff hockey but really it came down to special teams and cashing in on opportunities even when it's 5-on-5 you really need to cash even if you're being outshot you can get quality shots quality chances you need to make them count. It just goes to show, the Flyers, we talked a lot about all year secondary scoring, where's it going to come from, and once you get past the top line, and top lines, as you know, in playoff hockey get shut down. Giroux had one assist. Simmons didn't score at all in the series. Shen played a nice physical series, but I don't believe he scored either. I think he had a couple of assists. Oh. I could be wrong. Kind of a blur right now, but they only scored 6 goals. We should be able to remember them all. And other people need to step up. And Couturier is not a big scorer, but, that kind of hurts your depth on your other lines with him out for the series. Even a guy like Lawton, I mean, I really don't want to, go too far back with a guy who didn't score 10 goals this year, but you lose him, it just affects your depth and able to at least create a forecheck and that kind of thing. They didn't have the horses to hang with what was really the best regular season team this year, and I think they gave it a valiant effort. I think it was a positive that they made the playoffs, and I don't think we can really be negative, even though it's Negadelphia. I don't think we could be really negative too much. They just got to see where they're at. They're good enough to make the playoffs, or they do some things well, but they just don't have the people right now. But in what was a transitional rebuilding year, I think making the playoffs was a good thing overall.
Yeah, Gordon, we can actually run it down because it won't take all that much time. The 6 goal scorers were Michael Raffle, Shane Gostisbehere, Chris Vandevelde, empty netter, Ryan White, Andrew McDonald and Voracek gets one as well. Top line is Simmons. Voracek played most of the second line. Simmons, Shen, and And Giroux, one assist for Giroux, two apiece for Simmons and Shen, but no goals. Josh, I guess, what did it surprise you, given the lack of goal scoring, did it surprise you the Flyers were able to hang in with the Capitals? And what does that tell us about the Flyers that they were able to do that?
Eric, you must know me well. You led me right where I was going to go at that point. Only scoring six goals in the whole series in a six-game series, and they still take them to six games. And, you know, kudos to all of us. I believe all three of us had them losing in six. You never like to be right in that situation where you have, you know, your hometown team losing, but we did pick them to lose in six, and that's exactly what happened. But I don't think we thought it was going to go this way with them going down 3-0 and then fighting back to win two in a row. And coming back home, it looked like they might have had a chance of a repeat, although it was, you know, it was in the conference finals last time, so more important series, but a few years back, gone 6 years back, I believe, all the way back to 2010 when the Flyers went to the Cup and lost to the Blackhawks. They beat the Boston Bruins when they were down 3-0. They came back to win four games in a row to win 4-3 in that series. So we could have seen a repeat of that. We could have seen the Flyers win game six, and all the pressure would have been on Washington in game seven to win that game. And the series didn't go quite as what we expected. I think it shows that Michael Nyworth had an unbelievable series coming in and playing really well. He had a consecutive save streak for quite some time, and I think over 100 minutes of consecutive save streak. So he played really well and only scored six goals and still stay in the series. And it just shows their defense played well, their goaltending was great, and they were able to come away with a 2-1 victory and then a 2-0 victory, which really was kind of a 1-0 victory because they scored an empty netter late. And they really showed some grit and some guts and able to hang in there. And, you know, you look at it, you think a team scores six goals, they're probably going to get swept. So the Flyers didn't get swept. They end up taking them to six games in the Washington Capitals. Won what they call the President's Cup. They won the President's Cup for having the best record during the regular season, so they were playing the best team, at least on paper, in all of hockey. So to take them to six games, being the 1-8 matchup, and having not getting swept or not losing five games was pretty impressive, I think, for this Flyers team. So there's a lot to look forward to. The commentators talked about how this Flyers team was, as we've talked about on the show, how the Flyers team is ahead of schedule, and they weren't supposed to make the playoffs even this year. I thought they had an outside chance to make it probably as the 8th seed, which they did. But they're ahead of schedule. They have a lot of young players coming up the next couple years. Giroux's still in his prime. Voracek's still in his prime. They had poor Wayne Simmons is still in his prime. So they still have, you know, a good mix of veterans and then younger guys coming up. That can really help them out, and I think that they're going to be a team to reckon with the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think they should, Josh, you know, some really good points that they showed a lot of resiliency all year long. I mean, they were counted first in the beginning of the year, didn't look so good. Then certainly in January, people were counting them out. February, they're I think 9 points out of a playoff spot, and they, you know, had jump over, I think, four teams to get there, and you know, it didn't look good, and then a couple times, and it didn't look good in the series. To show you how rare it was, and they quoted this on the national broadcast today, and I miss Doc Emmerich. I wish we had Doc Emmerich for this game, but we didn't have him, so you know, we got to buy with what we had. Teams that are down 3-0 in a playoff series have only even reached Game 7 nine times in NHL history. So, you know, we're all familiar with the Flyers not only getting there but winning it in 2010, Josh, you're right. But it's not even like that happens all that often. They get back. They would have only been the 10th team in NHL history to come back from a 3-0 deficit and force a Game 7. You know, forget about winning. It's just getting there. So, Gordon, biggest surprise of the series for you?
I thought a couple guys really stepped up. I thought, you know, a guy that I wanted to see traded, not that I don't like him, but I just felt that he had some value for other teams. And, you know, I was the negative one. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. And a guy I really wanted to see traded to a team that could use him at the deadline was Nick Schultz. And I thought he played really well in the series, blocked a ton of shots, and, you know, was really a steadying force back on the blue line. Enough so that I might want to have him back, you know, and I wasn't so sure before, yeah. So... obviously, and then, you know, the goaltending, Neuwirth really played extremely well, but we knew he had it in him. you know, I thought the fourth line played really well. I at times I'm a little critical. I think they roll the fourth line a little too much sometimes, just because they lack some offense, except for Ryan White has a little bit of offense. But I thought they did a lot when they were out there, and you know, so those were some positives that I saw.
Josh, how about you? Aside from Neuvirth, as Gordon said, maybe he's not a surprise. He played pretty well all year. What surprised you? Who surprised you?
Shane Gospier had a good series. He played well all season long. But the reason why he surprised me is because he is a rookie, and a lot of times rookie kind of shy under the pressure and cringe under the pressure and aren't able to perform. And he had a good series. He had one of the six goals, as you mentioned. He played really well on defense, and he had a really good series. So he surprised me, the fact that he was able to play well in his first ever playoff series.
Yeah, I think actually his first two games, he's sort of shaky back there. But I think you're right, though. As the series went on, he certainly got into form and, made some really nice moves today to create opportunities. They didn't get a ton of opportunities, but he created some of them. I'll throw in another guy in there, a guy who I consider to be the seventh defenseman, and what are we going to do with him next year with, you know, some of these other guys come up. And that's Brandon Manning, played really well. Brandon Manning not only played well on his own end and had some grit, but he created some offensive chances. At one point, he had most shots on the team in some of these early games. I forget which game it was in particular. I think he led the Flyers in shots. I mean, that's, you know, he really showed me something I hadn't seen from him. So I'll throw him in there. All right, last Flyers question, and before we switch to NFL draft again, Gordon, look ahead for us. What does this team need to do to get better for next season? What areas do we need to see improvement in?
Yeah, well, I think what we got to see, and even though it's disappointing that they didn't advance, you are going, you know, 8-1 in the conference, and you are playing the team, you know, the President's Cup team. So you really got to match yourself up against the ideal model, the ideal template. So in a way, it's pretty good. I think there's two paths to take. I mean, do you really start bringing up these younger guys that you have in your system, or do you kind of bring them in kind of more slowly? And I think Hextall's MO has been to do it the slow way. And so I think he needs to create at least one spot open on the defense, and whether it's Provorov, because Provorov I believe has one more year of junior hockey, or the Flyers. He can't go to the Phantoms. That's the way the rules are. But you're talking about maybe the best defenseman not in the NHL right now. And if he plays another year of juniors, he'll probably just score 100 points, but I don't know how that really helps his development as a player. So, you know, again, do you want him being your seventh or eighth defenseman and not dressing every night as well? So there's going to have to be a decision there, because remember, Delzato is out. And then, you know, obviously, Umberger won't be back. There's going to be, you know, a spot on the roster up front. There's a guy to keep an eye on. He finished the year with the Phantoms from Sweden, Oscar Lindblom, I think 2 years ago, fifth-round pick, played in the Swedish Elite League and really put up some decent numbers there for a young guy. The Swedish Elite League is probably the second-best league in the world next to the NHL. I think it's a little bit better than the KHL at this point. And here's a guy playing on a team there. I think he was on the second line or whatever team he played on. And he's a big guy. He's about 6'1". 190, 195 pounds, and in 8 games with the Phantoms, I think he had 7 points at the end of the season. So, he's a guy who maybe kind of slide in and be a play on one of your bottom lines. I think he's not considered like a big scorer per se, but maybe he can score a little more than some of the guys they have. And, you know, maybe just two guys like that come in with, you know, the other young guys that you have. And you keep moving forward. I think what we did really see, though, in a playoff setting, you really need that strong second line center, so that you have two lines rolling. If that first line is really being shut down, if there was a second line that was clicking. And while Nick Cousins does do some good things out there, this was his first playoff series, and he did some good things during the season, I don't know if you really want to be the kind of team that could really, you know, be a contender if he's really your number two center of the future, you know. So I think that's something they need to look at, and if that's in free agency or if that's somebody else they have in their system, Konechny or some of these other guys they have or somebody they might draft or how it goes. But, you know, looking forward, you know, obviously I want to see some young guys come through and be on the roster, but not so much that you're just turning the whole roster over. I don't think that's a healthy thing to do. I think they're going at a good pace right now, integrating the guys a few at a time and let them get experience, play through their junior careers, and then maybe a year of the Phantoms and see how it goes from there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll see a roster overhaul. I think, you know, certainly they won't use it as an excuse. I think when you talk about second line center, they certainly miss Couturier. His penalty killing, his just overall play, and of course he plays on that second power play unit and was actually producing some points there. So, if not goals for him, at least points. So I think they definitely missed him. I'd be shocked if Provorov's not on this team next year. I don't know what benefit he gets from another year. But obviously you're right, they're going to have to move somebody or move some defensemen to get him out of there. I think if they could trade Mark Streit, and maybe they can. He's 1 year left on his contract. It's a little pricey, but it's 1 year. And, you know, teams certainly need guys to work the power play point, and he can do that. You know, that might create a little spot, and they can work that out, work itself out next year. I think you're right about Nick Schultz. I do think they need an upgrade on the wing. Now, I'm not talking about Simmons had a terrific year. Brayden Schenn really showed me something the second half of the year, and even though he didn't get a goal in the playoff series, just the way he played, the physical way he played and created things and showed some toughness. And I don't mean fighting toughness, although he did that too. I mean just tough play on the boards. I do think that, you know, this third line guys, or even it was the second line on this because of the injuries, you know, your Scott Lawtons, your Matt Reeds, your even your Sam Gagne, who, you know, can't complain what he gave us. He gave us more than maybe we thought, but I, you know, they need some of that secondary scoring on those lines that they didn't get this year. They need more of it, and I'd like to, you know, whether that comes from within or that comes from without, I think that's an area they need to improve upon. Before we switch to the Eagles, caller, do you have a question or a comment on the Flyers? Okay, let's move on to the Eagles. Gordon, we're going to come back to you on the draft stuff, but first I want to get Josh's impression on the blockbuster trade with the Cleveland Browns, where the Eagles moved up to the second pick in the draft, where they are expected to pick whichever quarterback is left, and that is expected to be Carson Wentz, although I saw one mock draft, and maybe the guy was just doing it to be different, so I won't mention his name, who had the Rams taking Wentz, leaving the Eagles with Goff. Josh, what was your reaction to that haul of draft picks the Eagles sent to move up from 8 to 2?
Eric, I was completely surprised. We talked about it on the show last week. I mentioned I thought the Eagles weren't going to take a quarterback in this draft, especially where they were. Of course, they moved up from 13 first to 8 and then eventually to 2. And I didn't think they were going to move up to get a quarterback, and I didn't think they were going to pick a quarterback where they were. I thought, you know, re-signing Sam Bradford, even though they didn't commit to him completely long-term, it was a 2-year deal, but I thought that put some faith in Sam Bradford that he was going to be their quarterback, at least for the present, and they were going to wait another year or two to get their quarterback for the future. But they seem to like Wentz a lot, and they seem to think that he's their quarterback of the future. And, you know, now Sam Bradford, there's talk that he wants out, he wants to be traded. But in some ways, this could be the best thing that happens to Sam Bradford. He, you know, a lot of times, that first year, that rookie quarterback doesn't play for a whole season and just sits and watches. And if Sam Bradford gets off to a good start and maybe it lights a fire under him, he knows that he has to play well to stay in there as the starting quarterback. And he has a great season. And then, you know, you have, you know, the best of both worlds. You have either you could trade Sam Bradford and get some of those picks back, or you could keep Sam Bradford if he, you know, gets to the playoffs and wins a playoff game, which is possible. This NFC East is really weak, probably one of the weakest divisions in all football, if not the weakest. You know, Washington won it last year with less than 10 wins. So they had, I think they finished with a 9-7 record. So it's possible that the Eagles win the division this year, and they made a lot of moves in the offseason. They were the most active team in the offseason with making trades and signing free agents. So I think this could be a good thing for this team. They didn't give up as much as the Rams. The Rams gave up way more to get to the number one pick than the Eagles did. The Eagles did give up a lot, don't get me wrong, but they didn't give up as much as the Rams. And if Wentz is their guy of the future, then I think it's a good move. And I think that, you know, you need a franchise quarterback. I think Sam Bradford is good, but he's probably a top 15 at best. He's probably a top 15 quarterback. I was going through this with a friend of mine, where does he rank in terms of the quarterbacks, and he said he's probably not even in the top 20. And we started to go through the quarterbacks around the league, and you know, you can debate here and there which quarterbacks are better than him, and it's hard to say because Bradford hasn't stayed healthy a lot of his career, and it's hard to say where he is. But the second half of the career of his of the season last season, when he came back, he put up the best numbers of any quarterback. I think he had a 73 or 74 completion percentage, and he just played really well after coming back from the injury. Even though the Eagles didn't make the playoffs and they fell short, he personally played really well, and I think that's why they re-signed him. So it's not a full season; it's half a season. We'll see what he can do with a full season, if he does in fact get a chance to play a full season. But he is an accurate quarterback. He is a former number one overall pick himself out of Oklahoma, and he has the pedigree to do it. But I think, as I said, I think at best he's a top 15 quarterback in the league. He's not even in the top 10. So they want a top 10 or a top 5 quarterback, and they're picking at number 2, which is, of course, if you remember, back in 1999, where they picked McNabb at number 2 overall, and there was a lot of dissension. They wanted Ricky Williams, and it turns out McNabb had a much better career than Ricky Williams, and it was the right pick. And McNabb was the quarterback of the future, and he had many great years here in Philadelphia. So maybe it'll be a good luck charm picking at number 2 again, and they get the better quarterback in Wentz than the Rams get in Goff.
Yeah, and the Browns that year picked number 1 and took quarterback Tim Couch, if those who remember Tim Couch.
That's right.
No wonder the Browns wanted to trade out of that pick, because their history of taking quarterbacks is just hard.
There were five. Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say there were 5 quarterbacks, I believe, taken in the top 15 or 20 that year in the draft, and Culpepper had a decent start to his career, but McNabb was really the only one who had an all-star, close to Hall of Fame type career.
Yeah, Cleveland, no matter where they pick, ends up with a bad quarterback. You know, doesn't matter if they pick them high or low, wherever they take them. I said that when Johnny Manziel came out. I don't think anybody hangs on my every word, but I remember saying, I didn't know if Johnny Manziel was going to work out or not, but as soon as the Browns took him, I knew he was going to be a bust, because they just, you know, they're going to pick the wrong guy. Gordon, we run through the hall what this is with the fourth round picks, and they trade a first round pick next year, a second round pick the year after that. Was it worth it?
No, it wasn't. When you attach real names to this, it's easy to just say, well, it's a hall of picks to get your possible franchise quarterback. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, it wasn't so long ago that for another franchise, Sam Bradford was a franchise quarterback coming out, and now you have him here as sort of a recycled guy, and that's a cautionary tale right there of what could happen. So if you happen to own, you know, a pick high enough that you could draft your franchise quarterback, that's fine, and I would advise teams to do so, because you don't get the opportunity to do it. But to really trade that much up in a sport like football, where you need things everywhere, you know, you win by having the least weak spots, you know. It's more important to have, you know, not to have depth. It's to not have spots that could be exposed. And the draft is really where you do that. And yeah, and most really specifically in the second, third, fourth rounds, and then coming up with a gem in the late rounds. So, you know, when you attach real names to it, I mean, I went through a full 7-round mock for the Eagles, and then had to pull names back out. Just looking at that kind of makes me a little bit heartsick, you know. And then you think of whoever it will be the first round pick next year. If the Eagles aren't a very good team next year, and you think maybe middle of the pack at best, you know, that's going to be probably a pick somewhere, top 10 to 15, you know, that Cleveland will have, and then a second round pick the following year. That's 5 guys, and you know, whoever the Eagles end up with, whether it's Goff or Wentz, and it'd probably be Wentz, but you never know. You know, they better be more than just good. They better be great. They better win you a Super Bowl, which McNabb didn't do. I mean, you know, and that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy. But I mean, if you're giving him up everything, you better get everything in return, and everything is a Super Bowl ring, which this town has not had, and last championship's 1960. So I'm not a big trade up guy. I'm a big draft nick. I study all this. I've seen so many draft picks work out late, not work out early. In drafts, really looking at it closely over, I guess, probably since like the 80s, since I really started following this stuff really closely. You know, it can go right, but it can easily go wrong. And I'm just not a fan of trading up as much as I am just either staying put, doing your homework, staying put, and knowing who you want when your turn comes, or trading back if you have enough confidence in yourself that you can still get, that you've done your homework, you can still get who you want, and add picks. So it's not worth it, and I'm not taking away from either one of those guys, but I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to be at least a Pro Bowl quarterback to justify this. And Gordon, and on your mock draft on PhillyFanatics.com, your mock draft for the Eagles, you know, just looking at it, for people to look at it, you know, in addition to picks, which we'll get to in a minute, you know, they only have one more pick till the fifth round. So,
yep.
So basically, they pick one more time till the third day of the draft, after the number two pick on Thursday night. And you know, they have, like you said, plenty of needs. Before I ask my next question, caller, do you have a draft question or comment?
Yes, about the draft. Here, what Gordon's saying, and the thought of don't mortgage the future for the current need, and I'd like to just dispute that in the fact that there is no future for the Eagles. They're not winning anything for years. What are they mortgaging? I say go for it and try to do whatever you can this year to again make your statement, make a big splash.
So best case scenario, and I'm sorry, please state your name as you do that, when you do that, but best case scenario, when do you see Carson Wentz playing, starting for the Eagles? How many years?
This year? If they can swing a trade for Bradford, fine. Otherwise, he's out of here. His nickname, Ace Bandage Bradford, is probably accurate. He's not going to finish the season. And you're going to have Wentz come in, and he's going to have all the quarterbacks, Frank Reich and all these guys behind him, and he's ready. He runs a pro-style offense in college, one of the few college quarterbacks doing that, and he's big and strong, and let him learn. Eli Manning started every single game since he came into the league. Not Peyton.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate for you, though. But coming out of North Dakota State, now there's nothing, you know, small school quarterbacks can make it. Joe Flacco is a great example of it. But that's a big jump in competition from North Dakota State to the NFL. That's what I'm saying. You think he can excel his first year as a starter?
He's 6'5", 240. He's got a big time arm. Let him play.
Okay. I wish I shared your confidence.
There's no confidence. They're going to go 10-6 this year, 12-4 now. They're going to rebuild with Bradford or a young quarterback. And if you're going to rebuild, then you do it with a young guy and let him grow. And McNabb started in the 10th game of his first year. Second year, they were in the conference championship game against the Rams. You know, there's an old coach, George Allen, used to say, the future is now. And it's really, you know, you're playing for 2 or 3 years from now, and you're going to be 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have it. So your philosophy, and Gordon, I'm going to come back to you on this. You know, there's some thought that Howie Roseman, who might have been under the gun, by doing this buys himself a couple of years because, you know, obviously, we're not going to see what they are until, you know, Carson Wentz develops. Do you think that was a factor in this trade or not?
Not at all. Not at all. I think to think that a general manager is under the gun should be every year. Of course he's under the gun. That's what makes it fun. Every single person on that team should feel it's the most important game the next game they play. Their defense is going to be better this year. Their pass rush is going to be better. They've improved the offensive line just with some free agents. They're going to be better than they were last year. And they have coaching that's going to say, let's play football and stop with all the other nonsense that you have with Chip Kelly, devising new systems. Get on the line, block, pass, run, win.
I believe the smoothie station has been, I believe, shut down, although I'm not sure about that. I'll have to get somebody to check into that. Thank you. Very insightful comments. I appreciate it. Josh, thank you. Josh, real quickly, and then Gordon on the other side, we'll get you to run down some of the needs of the Eagles and who they might pick later in the draft after Carson Wentz or whoever quarterback they have. Josh, why do you think they, and we just heard the caller, but why do you think they felt the need? Let me ask another way. Howie Roseman said they looked ahead, you know, the next 2 years, and they really don't see a quarterback, you know, they think's better than Wentz or Goff coming out. And my question is, two years ago, no one would have known who Carson Wentz is. So isn't that a little bit contradictory to say that when, you know, Carson Wentz wouldn't have been on the radar 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think that's a little strange for them to say that. I think you don't quarterbacks emerge every year. You know, the freshman year, sophomore year, quarterback may not look so good, but his junior year or senior year, he looks great. So I think that is a little contradictory for them to say that, and I think that they they could have their quarterback, and hopefully it works out. But you never know. Next year, the year after that, there might be a quarterback that's out there that's even better than Wentz. So it's hard to say what's going to happen and what's going to be. But hopefully it works out for them. And like I said, hopefully either Wentz plays and he plays well in his first year, or Sam Bradford plays and he plays well. So
okay.
They did make a lot of moves. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Josh. And we're going to go on the other side. Thank you, those who listen live. And we will talk to you next week. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. All right. I'm sorry, Josh, to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to finish saying that I think that hopefully it works out for them, but you never know. Gordon, I could kind of go either way with this. I understand a lot of the points that Gordon was making. You don't want to give up so many draft picks to move up. But if they think they got their guy and they think they have their quarterback of the future, I think that it was a good move. I think that, once again, they didn't give up as many picks as the Rams gave up. And they didn't completely mortgage their future entirely. They did give up a first-round pick next year, but a second-round pick in 2018, so not another first-round pick. And they already didn't have a second-round pick this year, so they didn't give that up. They already gave that up in the Bradford trade. So hopefully they can – Howie Rosen has been known for in the past for finding some guys late in the draft, so hopefully they can find some guys in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round. And I think they're going to – you talked about some of their needs maybe. I think they're going to draft an offensive lineman. I think they can really use some help there to protect Bradford or Wentz or whoever's in there. So I think you can get an offensive lineman late in the draft. That's always a deep position. And I think that they might draft a running back. I think that they might draft a cornerback. And those are some of the needs that I could think of.
All right. Thank you, Josh. Gordon, I'm going to hit you with a couple questions. Ready? So we'll just do them
all
quickly.
Right.
The first one is, you know, who were they? Because you follow the draft very closely. I know you do. Who were they bidding against that they had to offer all this stuff to the Browns for the second pick? You know, who were they competing against there that they had to offer that much?
Well, they might have been and to Josh's point real quick, I mean, the reason the Rams had to give up more is because the Rams were trading up from the 15th spot. So, obviously, they had to give up more than the Eagles, who were trading up from the 8th spot. But it could have been the 49ers. I mean, Chip Kelly. And I'm sure they didn't want Chip Kelly to get up there and get the quarterback that they could have. So, you know, that's one team I could think of right away. Possibly the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys are already picking fourth, and they could be thinking of somebody to groom to take Tony Romo's place. And I don't think the Cowboys are going to ultimately go that way, but that could have been in their thought process as well. So, you know, and you really don't want them to get the guy, and they obviously wouldn't have to trade as much to move up from 4-2. So, and you know, and just maybe a little bit of a pride thing with Chip Kelly. They're the team that's the team that really pop up at me, especially if it was Goff. I don't know if Kelly would be as interested in Wentz, but I think Goff really would have been his guy if he ended up at number two. So that's who I think maybe they're competing against to get up there.
Okay. Had they stayed at eight, it looks like maybe Goff and Wentz, certainly after the Rams trade up, if Goff and Wentz are both going to be gone. At eight, could they have taken a quarterback, or is that too much of a reach for a Paxton Lynch?
Well, I don't know. Going into, at the end of the college football season, Paxton Lynch was rated as a top quarterback. Something changed without a lot of these guys taking a snap. You know, Paxton Lynch kind of became number three. Connor Cook from Michigan State fell from like a first rounder to being like a third rounder. You know, a lot of things just change with these guys and the process that goes on, and that's fine. I mean, between the Senior Bowl and the combine and personal workouts and interviews and everything else. But, you know, Paxton Lynch, to me, I saw him play a lot of times. I mean, he is, he's tall. He's got a good arm. He can move a little bit. You know, I didn't see any three of these guys as day one starters, to be honest with you. I don't think either one was a Winston or a Mariota type to start day one. And so it's kind of shocking that they're going to go 1-2. If the Eagles really felt that way, and I felt it would have been not a reach for anybody, because I think I'm going to be doing a full mock draft for you, but just to give a little bit away, I think the 49ers will take a hard look at Lynch, let's just say that, at seven. And I don't think if the Eagles really wanted to develop a guy, that eight would have been that outlandish, that people would have just, you know, thought it was the craziest pick in the world. Or they could have traded back to 12 to 14, somewhere like that, picked up picks, and probably still gotten Lynch.
Okay.
Assuming
Josh,
he made
do you have a question for Josh, do you have a question for Gordon about the draft?
Yeah, Gordon, what do you think are some of their biggest needs? They made a lot of moves in the offseason already. As I said, they were the most active team out there. They made some trades. They made some free agent signings. But where do you think is their weakest position, and where do you think is their biggest need? And who do you think who are some of the players you think they're going to look at drafting coming up Thursday?
Well, I don't think anywhere you can almost go to every position on the field and they can use at least an infusion of talent or an infusion of depth almost anywhere. I'm really concerned a little bit about linebacker, and on at face value you think, well, they have Jordan Hicks and they have Michael Kendricks, but those guys they're young and they're talented and they're also injury prone. And I would have loved at number 8 to add Miles Jack there. That's who I originally had them taking, the Miles Jack from UCLA. That would have given them 3 talented, young, fast sideline-to-sideline linebackers. Because consider Connor Barwin and Brandon Graham, and even the backups, your Marcus Smith, talk about a first-round bust, or Brian Braman, all those guys are moving to defensive end in this new system. And you really don't have a lot of depth at linebacker. They signed the guy, Nigel Bradham, who's played with, Schwartz elsewhere. He's more of a system guy. Your only backups right now are Dante Skinner, who was on the practice squad last year, and Brandon Hepburn, who was on the practice squad last year, and Najee Good, who's kind of had a lot of frequent flyer miles kind of coming and going to Philadelphia on and off the roster a bunch of times. Those are your only backups at linebacker right now. So in my original draft, I had them taking Miles Jack, who was coming off a knee injury. The only thing that would push him out of the top 5 is that at 8. And I had them taking Tyler Matakevich from Temple in the 4th round, who can play inside or outside linebacker. And that would have solved their linebacker depth. And now I really don't see how they can do that. Now in my new mock draft, I had them taking a linebacker in the 7th round because nothing really came up before that. So linebacker to me is a need. I think they still need to address defense, and I think they put themselves in a spot where they really can address defense because they really need a running back. Like you said, I mean, DeMarco Murray didn't fulfill expectations, but Ryan Matthews is a pretty good back, but Ryan Matthews was also an injury issue. You have Sproles and you have Barnard. They're both kind of third down backs, return men, specialist type guys. You really need somebody to kind of split the carries with Ryan Matthews. And looking at this draft, it really falls off after about the 4th round. And there were some guys in the 4th round they could have taken, but they don't have a 4th round pick now. So now you really have to take somebody in the 3rd round. And the guy I kind of zeroed in on was Alex Collins from Arkansas. But it could be any one of many guys a few guys that will be around in the 3rd round. But, he's the name I kind of zeroed in on because I think he kind of fits. He has the same kind of running, tough inside runner, can bounce it outside, kind of like Matthews. He can kind of run the same system. And then I think you need still some help in the defensive front. I had a defensive tackle I really liked for them. The defensive line is really deep in this draft, at end and at tackle. And I had them taking a defensive tackle, Vernon Butler, in the 3rd round. I had to scratch that one off. And you remember these names because these are the guys you're giving up to get a quarterback who's going to wear a baseball cap all season and maybe even part of next season. So, I haven't taken a defensive tackle in the 5th round, but he's not as talented as the one they took in the 3rd round. And then you need offensive line. I haven't taken there's any number one of guys coming out of small schools who've started a bunch of years who, have good footwork, who've played left tackle, who might project more to right tackle. Just to keep it consistent with North Dakota State, I have Joe Haig from North Dakota State in the 5th round. Obviously a corner. I mean, they have a lot of young corners on the back half of their roster. I mean, Denzel Rice made the team last year. He was the only undrafted rookie that made the team, and you still have Jalen Watkins, and you still have some other guys. You have the 2 sixth-round picks from last year. All these guys are still there, and anybody can kind of just have a good camp and surprise you. But I'd like to see them add one more, and they really can't do that until late now. So you have to kind of look at, small school corners, make it all the time. So, I have a guy named Mike Jordan, no relation to the other Michael Jordan. He's not trying a 3rd sport. He's big, he's got speed, he's got production, but he's also a Division II guy. So that's kind of, some of the guys I have, and I think they need a receiver, but again, they kind of put themselves out of receiver market. I haven't taken a receiver in the 7th round. You had Daniel Braverman, who's kind of from that Julian Edelman, Wes Walker cloth.
Don't give them all away. We want people to go to the website.
I won't give them all away. Well, I give little write-ups on these guys. You can find out more about them anyway. So.
Yeah. No, I know you too. So, I was please check that out. PhillyFanatics.com. Gordon's Eagles mock draft, and like I said, we're gonna have the full mock draft coming up for the first round, coming up. All right, we're already at final thoughts. We've breezed through this show. Go ahead, Josh. Why don't you start us off on final thoughts?
All right, I'm going to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. I think I'm probably the most optimistic about them on the show, so I'll talk about them. They're at 9-10. They were 9-9 before the loss today. They were up 4-2 in the game, ended up losing 8-5 to the Milwaukee Brewers, who are in last place in the Central Division. It's not a very good team, but they do, of course, still have Brian Braun and some other guys that are Chris Carter, no relation to Chris Carter played football, but Chris Carter, good baseball player, good offensive baseball player for them as well. So they have some guys with some pop on that team. But Jared Eichhoff, the young pitcher for the Phillies, was having a really good outing and just kind of lost it after 75 pitches or so into it, which is to be expected. He's a young pitcher, and he's going to struggle late in games sometimes and not be able to go the distance. But the Phillies had a chance to go above 500 for the first time this season, and they weren't able to do it. They go to 9-10, but they're still sitting at third place in that division. Miami and Atlanta are just so bad. I think the Phillies have a good chance of finishing in third place, which would be a huge improvement from finishing in last place last season. So I don't think they're going to finish ahead of the Nationals, obviously, or the Mets, but third place would be a great improvement for this team. And the Las Vegas line on them is 75 wins. I kind of set my own line at 73 wins, not knowing that was the line, so I was pretty close on that mark. I picked the under. I think they're going to win less than 73 games, but I think that's pretty high, 75. But Vegas is usually pretty good at setting those lines, so it'll be interesting to see if the Phillies win 75 or more games or less than that. But they're off to a good start, and I think that it's exciting to have baseball back. It's exciting to have some young pieces there, Franco and Odubel Herrera, and then their pitchers, Eichhoff and Aaron Nola, and Vince Velasquez, and then they have some really good guys in the minors also who could come up and play as early as June or July, and I think that it's exciting to see that the Phillies do have some young players, and they're not going to be cellar dwellers this year, I don't think. I think they're going to finish once again ahead of Atlanta and Miami, so I think it's exciting to be able to watch this team that they can win some games.
Okay, yeah, that line's come down because it was in the upper 60s earlier. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, you know, the Joni Mitchell song, you don't know what you got till it's gone. Ed Snyder's gone. And really, you know, you look back and you know, when I grew up in the 70s, I know, Eric, you're around the same age as I am, and, you know, what the Flyers meant to a lot of us, a team from Philadelphia actually winning a championship when a lot of the other teams weren't very good. The Phillies were starting to get better, but really we had like, grown up with mostly losing and what the Flyers meant to a lot of us. And we really looked up. I mean, Bobby Clark was my boyhood idol and you know, McLeish and Barber and all those guys. But when you look back, I mean, he might be the real hero there. I mean, you didn't go buy an Ed Snyder jersey. You bought a Bobby Clark jersey, but he brought hockey to Philadelphia. He was, you know, and the whole story about how he brought the team here and, you know, I didn't always agree with where he was coming from all the time, but I was glad that we had him as our owner because, you know, he was dedicated to the team. He was dedicated to winning. I don't think it's an accident that a lot of the players feel like they're part of a family here and they stay in the area after their careers end. And, I just have a lot of respect for the man, and I'm sorry he's gone.
Yeah, we talked about him some last week, and, Gordon, I'll just piggyback on your final thought and say, you know, if he were still around, or, you know, I have a feeling he would have been down there shaking the hands of everybody in that locker room and telling them what a great effort they gave, even though they lost, and keep their heads up and congratulating them on representing the Flyers, the way the Flyers compete, the way the Flyers are supposed to compete. Maybe they weren't good enough to win, but they certainly lived up to the Flyers' credo of you know, trying your best and doing the best you can and competing every day, every night, every game. And then he probably would have been on the phone with Ron Hextall tomorrow morning, first thing, to ask him what he's going to do to get better, unless he called him tonight. So you're right, Gordon. We talked about this last week, just the amazing, you even forget about all the things he's done, just the whole South Philly sports complex, WIP, Comcast Sportsnet, the Xfinity Live complex, all these things happened under Ed Snyder, and really maybe the most influential person in Philadelphia sports in the past half century. So you're absolutely right. I want to thank everybody for listening. I can't tell yet, but last couple of weeks we've had a huge increase in number of listeners. So I hope we have a lot of you still here right now. So thank you for listening. And for Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, I'm Eric Fisher. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. Great Flyers coverage and Gordon's great Eagles coverage. And, of course, we'll cover the draft. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next Sunday.